Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 90 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Good morning, mate. Pretty good. Pretty
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, having an interesting week. Re-established a connection with a publishing company I used to shoot for.
Oh, okay.
It was a bit of an interesting thing. I went to a Photoshop CS3 seminar stroke
That's right.
workshop.
Yep, a couple of weeks
and,
back.
And yep. caught up with the publisher, a publisher I used to work with. And we'd sort of just lost track. Work sort of died off for them a little. And then, I don't know, I didn't get follow it up. And that's how these things go.
Mm-hmm.
And then we shook hands at this seminar. And I said, so what's up, mate? And he said, oh, well, we've got another photographer now. And I sort of asked why. And he sort of said, well, I don't know, but we're not really happy with him that much anymore.
Oh.
And I went and met with him yesterday. And yeah, I'm back. So another client, which is always good. Because, you know, I mean, in a fickle industry like photography, and this is, you know, for every one of us, you never, ever consider that anything is going to be, you know, particularly permanent.
Yeah.
Because people come and go. The people with whom you have relationships come and go. And they change, you know, what their positions are, and from hiring the photographers to no longer hiring the photographers.
Yep.
And then, of course, you know, your relationships often take you from one business to another. There's a client of mine who has worked with Kodak and is now working with a very large bank, and you know, she introduced me to Kodak as their photographer.
Yep.
And now, of course, she's introducing me at the bank as their photographer. So it's been a busy week. Meaning that I've drawn almost a complete blank as to what to do with this podcast, because I've had my head everywhere else.
Well, we've got a few loose ends to tie up. So
we do. Yeah. So today might be a loose end tying up day, because we've got a competition to talk about.
Yep.
We have some Flickr stuff to talk about.
Yep.
Our video podcast stuff to talk about, mm-hmm. and a couple of email questions to answer. So,
Sweet.
But you had a great time cleaning your sensor.
I did. Now, this all came about because I've been thinking for a couple of weeks and putting it off because I was dreading the expense of just knowing that I really need to get my camera cleaned before I shoot the wedding in three weeks or whatever it is. And I thought to myself, where am I going to go to get my camera cleaned? You know, I thought I could go to any camera store and they'll probably, you know, send it off to a camera cleaning place, but they'll just, you know, whop on a huge commission for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, why don't I have a look on Google and see if I can find whoever does the actual cleaning so I can deal direct rather than, you know, paying for a middleman.
Yeah.
And in the process, I came across www.cleaningdigitalcameras.com. I mean, it's obvious in hindsight, but...
Cleaningdigitalcameras.com. Who would have thought?
Who'd have thought? Yeah.
Yeah.
So off I go to the website, and basically this guy, or the two guys who set this up, you know, one of them is a, you know, certified camera repairer and cleaner, and they've outlined the whole process involved in cleaning the sensor of your digital camera. And I will post the before and after shots on the blog so you can just see how absolutely disgustingly vile the sensor was in my camera.
Folks, I've seen the pictures. Okay, I would suggest you, this is not for children under 18.
No.
All right? It was just disgusting.
It was pretty
shocking.
Bad. Yeah.
How did you ever take pictures with that sensor, dude?
Oh, I don't know. Man, it was shocking. So anyway, yeah, so I had a look around the website and I followed his instructions on the first page because he said, you know, guys, I know that guys, you know, will just jump in and only read the instructions when things go wrong, but this is one site where you absolutely must read the first five pages before you start.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that and, I had all of the stuff around the home that I needed and so I made myself a little swab and went ahead and cleaned my sensor. Now, you've seen the after shot. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. There are a couple of sort of areas there where it's a bit smudged.
Yep.
So I may need to try it again, but it is a 500% improvement over what I had.
Oh, for sure.
And,
for sure. You'll only have to Photoshop each image with a clone and heal tool for about an hour now rather than 4 hours before.
Yeah.
No more snakes and worms and, you know. You should have seen the man. I'm telling you, folks, check out the site. I don't know how he shot with this thing, but you know, I'm shocked. Quite frankly,
it was
quite
horrid,
disgusted.
which brings me to the question: like, how do you change lenses in the field without that crap getting into your camera?
Yeah,
is there a way to do it or not?
Quickly and away from the wind, basically. If I can, I'll sit in the car and do it, you know, right. Or something like that. It really is true. But I mean, if you're out shooting a landscape or in the middle of a wedding or something, you know, you haven't got, you know, you don't want to walk all the way back to your car, which might be on the road a half a mile away if you're shooting a landscape. You know, if you're shooting a wedding, you don't want to have to be running back and forth all the time. You've got to work fast, you know. So there's really, there's no way of avoiding it. And it is a constant problem, which is why the guys in the little white coats are actually trying to find ways of having in-camera sensor cleaning, you know. Yeah. And there are some cameras who have that down, like Olympus, I think, you know, we're sort of among the first to begin a sort of vibration cleaning of the sensor and all sorts of things. But I don't know that any of them work absolutely perfectly, but they do work. But look, it's one of those things with digital that you know, you've got to be very, very aware of as you're changing lenses. And remember that the zoom lens also is a pump. Effectively, each zoom lens is a pump, because as you zoom in and out, it actually you know, pumps air in and out of your camera. Well, simply because of the motion of zooming, all the movements inside your lens create, you know, vacuum and draw in air, and then of course push the air out.
Where's there a hole for the air to get in and out of the camera?
Well, it's through the lens, of course. I mean, there are openings in the, you know, there's air in the lens, there's air in the camera,
yep.
And then of course there's got to be some allowance for movement of air in order for the thing simply to move. So you are actually moving, you know, air around, even if it didn't actually come in or leave the camera, it's still moving around within the body of the camera and the workings of the lens. So you're going to be disrupting dust or whatever each time you zoom in and out. May not be a lot, but it is a movement that will disturb things inside your camera. So cleaning the sensor is just one of those things that you've got to do. Or have done. I actually came across a product called Visible Dust. These are little motorized brushes and swabs that work very well. And if you just, you know, Google Visible Dust, it'll take you to you know, some websites that will explain where the product is available. They're only just becoming available in Australia, but I understand that they're easy to buy in the United States and Europe. But it's a little motorized brush, and basically is, you know, has been used here by a lot of people that I've spoken to, and works very, very well.
A bit like a street sweeper.
Sort of, yeah. It's very, very fine brush. It basically, you know, has a very high speed rotation, and you just open up your camera and brush across your sensor. Oh. I have not done this yet. I must admit, you're a braver man than I, because I don't know if I want to touch the sensor on my camera. Because once you do that, and if you scratch or damage, man, see you later.
Yeah.
So you weren't concerned about that, Bruce, or naturally you were concerned, but not overly?
I was. I read all of the instructions on the website, and it's interesting. You know, you quite often think about, you know, communication via the written word. Not, you know, you can't always convey everything you want to convey just with the written word. There are certain things that only come across with the spoken word and with physical interaction with people. Yet, the way this site was written, after I'd read it, I thought, here's a guy who wants to share his knowledge, much the way I have done with my podcast, you know, and he's gone out of his way to explain all of the pros and all of the cons.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I shouldn't be hit with anything unexpected after having read this. Mm-hmm. I felt like after I'd read everything that he said, I thought, yep, I understand all of the pros and all of the cons. And based on that, yes, I'm prepared to have a go. He did say, you know, that above the sensor is the low pass filter, and that is essentially what you're cleaning.
Mm.
And he does stress, you know, do not put too much weight on it, because if you do, you can either A, as you said, scratch it, or B, even worse, crack it. And the problem is that if you scratch it or crack it, it is not a simple case of just changing the low pass filter. Basically, the whole sensor has to come out of the camera and be re-bedded, and you might as well buy a new camera.
For the price, probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was saying. So I figured, well, you know, I'm confident that I can clean it gently, and I had the materials in the house to give it a shot. I thought, well, I'm prepared to give it a go. So,
You're a brave man. But here's a business idea for any listener in any country. One of the problems for photographers, well, I know in Australia anyway, for me, this is what I've experienced, is that you have dirt on your sensor. And every shoot you do has this one or two spots or whatever it might be, and always the same spot. You have to do a shoot for a client. They need you there on Thursday, and you've got to go down Thursday and do this shoot. In the meantime, you know your sensor is dirty, but you don't actually have the time to hand your camera over to a technician and have him clean it, because he can't promise that he'll have it back to you by Wednesday night so you can get it, pick it up and have it ready for the shoot. Now, if there was either mobile sensor cleaning guy, right? Or a place relatively centrally located for in the metropolitan area of any city, whereby you could just turn up and have your camera done while you wait. Do you know how many DSLR users need their sensors cleaned?
Yeah.
How many professional photographers would love to have you just drop by their studio, clean their sensor, hand over however many dollars you're asking, and they have their camera back within 20 minutes?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, how long did it take you, Bruce?
I'd say from when I sat down to start reading the website, I probably spent 20 minutes, half an hour reading the website before I actually got started.
Right.
It then took me probably 45 minutes to, put the swab together and set it up and make sure I was happy with what I'd come up with before I, actually committed to the task.
Mm-hmm.
And then, maybe 15, 20 minutes, I did about three attempts at the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you were a guy who just had the gear and knew what you were doing, how long would the process take?
10, 15 minutes.
Right. So in 10 or 15 minutes, you could drop by a studio.
Yeah.
You could clean his. You could clean his DSLRs. You could charge whatever you wanted because he does. You could charge $100 because that's what the technicians are charging.
Yep.
But you've got your camera.
Yeah.
You've handed it over.
You haven't had to be without it for a week.
Nah. And you can't as a photographer unless you've got, several backup units, and we don't all have that kind of money.
No.
So, if you're unemployed and thinking, gee, I could do that for a business, I reckon there'd be DSLR users all over town that would be happy to have that as a service.
That is an awesome idea, dude.
Thank you.
That's like the next Jim's mowing. Really? Dead set. And like for listeners outside of Australia, a guy called Jim set up a franchise probably 20 years ago, and it basically he was a contract lawnmower, and now he has these green trailers being towed by vans all over the cars all over the country with Jim's Mowing on it, because he franchised out his name and his image to contract lawnmowers, and now everyone knows Jim's Mowing.
Very wealthy man. Very wealthy man. Because, I don't want to mow like my lawn. If I can hand over $25 and get someone else to mow it, mow my lawn, baby. I got better things to do with my time.
But seriously, I think the mobile idea is better than the a central location, because you could set up in one of those, people mover vans, like those commercial people mover vans, and set up a sterile room in the back of it.
Yes.
Dust-free, dust-proof.
And away you go.
Yeah, man,
turn up,
that's
pull up
awesome.
In the driveway, like a mobile repair guy.
Exactly.
And just say, give me your camera.
Yeah.
Pull you back in a few minutes.
Yeah.
That'll be $100.
Man, that is an awesome idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go, Bruce. If suddenly you're driving another sports car, I'll know that you've taken me up on the idea. But, if you had the products, it wouldn't take you much to get a business like that up and running, because photographers constantly need their sensors cleaned.
Yep.
And they can't afford to hand over their camera for days waiting for the technician to finally get around to doing it because he's got a backlog of other repairs.
And with the growth in the digital photography market, that's just waiting to be exploited.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. If anybody takes it up as a business, at least honor me by saying calling it Shelton's Digital Cleaning Sensor Service or something. I mean, I don't care what your name is, but honor me in some way. And if you do become a multimillionaire, just remember me, will you? You know, but it is needed. It is certainly needed, and I would certainly pay for it. I would absolutely pay for it. You know, every couple of months or a month, I'd have you around at my place.
Yep.
And I'd have a clean sensor, and I would save myself so much time in, you know, photoshopping or cloning or whatever. My sensor's pretty clean, has been for a long time, but if I was a landscape shooter out or in dusty circumstances all the time, if I was, you know, shooting, if I was, you know, I've managed to keep it clean. Don't know how, because I don't actually take a lot of precautions, but it's going to get that time soon, and I'm getting busier all of a sudden, and because we're getting into spring and summer here.
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, if I had a mobile guy, it'd be just awesome. So think about that, folks. But in the meantime, I'm going to get the link up for this product called Visible Dust. We'll also get the link up for cleaning digital cameras, was it, .com?
Yep.
But this Visible Dust product is also, it looks very good. And I will get a link up onto the audiotu.com website so that you can have a look at that as well.
So have you actually used it?
No, but there are tutorials and reviews on the website on how to use it. Little video tutorials, etc. So it's very good. I will do a little bit more research on it from the people in Australia who distribute it have not been particularly responsive to my requests for a review product.
Mate, so that's just because they don't know who you are.
Maybe that's true, and I find that hard to believe. You know,
sacrilege.
I mean, do they not know who I am?
Heresy.
You know, heresy. You know, do they know who Angelina Jolie is? Yes. They know who Brad Pitt is? Yes. You know, and they don't know who I am? Amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. So there you go, folks. if you need your sensor cleaned, there's a couple of options for you. Now, we've got a little bit of business to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Our Flickr site's doing really well. We still only have 54 members, but thank you for
57 as of this morning.
57, is it?
Yeah.
All right, good. We've had a couple more grow while I've been online. That's excellent. and it really is a great interaction and gives everybody a chance to look at everybody's pictures. So I hope you're all having a look at the stuff that I've uploaded. I did a wedding on Sunday, so I've just uploaded all of or a few of my favorite shots. And interestingly, Tamron gave me the 18-250 lens to try out, so I thought I'd just whack that on and try a few shots at this wedding. And I was very impressed with this lens. Really, really impressed with this lens. And I'm not one for big focal length lenses like that, 18-250, but I was very impressed. Some of the shots I took with it are both on my blog, my personal blog, and on the Flickr site, on my Flickr site.
Yep.
So have a look. But speaking of the Flickr site, I did promise Dave Elfring that I would answer his question on Singray variable neutral density color and color intensifying filters. Now, if you've all been to the Flickr site and read Dave's question, he says, I've had the idea of purchasing a neutral density filter to block light and allow longer exposures during daylight shots. You've all seen these wonderful dreamy shots of waterfalls and ocean surf that look smooth and foggy. They all used a neutral density filter. Recently, I found out about the Singray variable neutral density filter, which can dynamically go from 2 times to 8 times in filtering capability. All great things have a catch, right? Well, in this case, the filter goes for $340 US.
Ouch.
Ouch. That's more than I paid for my first three lenses, he says. Still, it's tempting, since that one filter would give all the neutral density range one could ever probably want. I'd be curious about how Shelton, Bruce, and the group feel about this, and filters in general. I've made a lot of use of Singray graduated neutral density filters, and it has a neutral density filter, and it has a permanent place in my bag. The last filter subject is the Singray color intensifier, which is supposed to increase saturation of greens and reds in ways that Photoshop alone cannot do. I'd be curious for input and opinion on that as well, Dave Elfring. Well, thank you, Dave. I think, to be honest with you, much would depend on the level of commitment you have to this kind of photograph. I really don't believe that you need a filter that will give you that kind of neutral density variation. I've only ever used one neutral density filter, and that was an ND8, which is a 3-stop neutral density filter. And I've never needed anything that gave me a longer shutter speed than that gave me. To be honest with you, I would just simply settle for a good quality ND8 if you're wanting to do that kind of thing. And remember that you've got apertures to play with, ISOs to play with, and that would probably save you a heck of a lot of money. $340 US mm-hmm. will not only get you a decent neutral density, but help you to buy a lot of other things that would be more practical, I would say. Look, here's an idea.
You can buy a Coke and A series for that.
Exactly.
A whole bunch of filters.
You can buy a whole bunch of Koken filters for that, or even one really nice, you know, Galen Rowell or Sing Ray that's a little more used to you or whatever. I don't think the Galen Rowell filters are quite that expensive. Maybe 200 US or something. I think they are, but I'm talking off the top of my head. And even that's quite expensive for a filter. But 340 US for a variable Sing Ray neutral density filter. I'd say it'd be something that you would have to commit, you know, to as part of a profession to doing. Look, what you really want in a neutral density filter simply is that you want darkness, of course. You know, you want density, and you want as little color cast from it as possible. The complaints sometimes about the Koken neutral density filters is that they do have a bit of a color cast. I haven't had too much of a problem with mine, but it's nothing you can't correct with a simple click of the eyedropper tool in Photoshop if it is an issue. And much would depend on these shots that you want to do. You talk about the waterfalls and the ocean surf. Sometimes, David, you don't even need a neutral density filter. Usually waterfalls are found in forested areas, rainforests, etc. And on a sunny day, you get a lot of light bouncing around, a lot of contrast, a lot of mottled leaf shadows and that kind of thing. And so on a sunny day, it may not even be the shot that you want to do. Most of these kinds of photographs of waterfalls and ocean surf, wherein you've got the moody, dreamy, watery movement look, and it looks fantastic, are the kinds of photographs that you would actually take on a day with more moody or subdued lighting. So do you need that kind of neutral density? And in fact, you don't need an incredibly long shutter speed for that kind of effect. You can get, you know, a milky sort of water effect in a waterfall in an eighth of a second, or 1 second is plenty. With the ocean, much the same. The longer the shutter speed, the less, of course, sometimes even the effect can be in the ocean. So I don't know personally that I would spend that kind of money on a filter that I, one, may not need all the time, and two, may not really need at all, considering the nature of the use that I was going to put it to. Buy yourself a cheaper neutral density, like an ND8, try that out, and see how you go. That might cost you $60 or $70. Try that out, see how that goes, and then if you're really not satisfied, and this is going to be something you're going to do a lot, then, of course, head down to the Sing Ray shop and buy that filter, you know, and that really is up to you. But that would be my advice on the subject from years of poverty and necessity, having to make things as I go. I've never needed anything other than an ND8 and just a little bit of a play around with my apertures, and away I go. As for the color intensifier, I've only ever used the Tiffin color enhancer. I haven't used the Sing Ray. The Tiffin was great. It had a really lovely way of saturating colors that was not overdone, but you know, you could see the difference. I like, and would, if somebody here in Australia imported them, I would probably have a Tiffin enhancer instead of a UV filter on every one of my lenses, because it would certainly be, you know, the kind of colors that I would like to deal with. I really like the Tiffin one, and you know, I would probably suggest that they would be a little bit cheaper than the Sing Ray as well. But if you're a landscape shooter, often color saturation is an issue, because you just want the color of the landscape to just be a little punchier than it was in real life. And the only reason we want that is because the real life situation is 3D and real. The 2D situation needs a little bit more power to it, and a color intensifier will do that. A lot of very, very well-known landscape photographers will use color intensifiers for their film or their digital shooting. And so, yes, I would have no problem suggesting that you use one of these filters if, you know, that's the kind of thing you're going to be doing. So I hope that helps. And let us know, Dave, how you go. And in fact, if you actually have opted for the cheaper neutral density, like an ND8, and you managed to successfully get the photographs that you're after, Dave, would you send them to us, please, so that we can see what you've done by saving yourself a lot of money? I think everybody would like to know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough. So keep us posted on that front, Dave. Would really appreciate that. We have an email from Martin Eves in the UK. Martin, thank you so much for becoming a Shutter's Dink listener. And we have actually talked many times about the subjects that you suggest, which are compositional matters, triangles, diagonals, foreground interest. But the thing that you actually suggest that we talk about is the KISS method. And that is, of course, keep it simple, stupid. And I talk about this time and time again, and I still see problems with that concept in people, in people's photography, and often I think it boils down to the try too hard to make this photo work problem. You know what I mean, Bruce?
Mm-hmm.
It's a case of this photo needs to be dynamic, and in order to make it dynamic, I have to tell the big story. I have to make sure that I've got it all in, and people can say, oh, look, cool, cool, look at that, oh, cool, he's got that in there. But all they're really doing is making the eye bounce around the place. What makes a photograph powerful, and this is what we talked about last week, is dominant and subordinate subject matter. A powerful photograph, as you suggest, Martin, is one where the subject leaps out at you with absolutely no contest, no argument attached to it. And therein is the basis of the keep it simple, stupid philosophy. And case in point, I'm off to Northern Queensland to do some workshops up there, portrait and wedding photography workshops. And that's a whole story in itself. It's fabulous. Did I tell you about how this came about?
No. I think you may have.
One of my readers who reads Better Pictures magazine was up there and just rang me out of the blue just said, look, you know, we have no workshops up in regional Queensland, up in northern Queensland. Would you come? I said, sure, I'll come. So she's organized, I think we're now up to about 37 people.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got a basic photography session on Friday night. Then I've got a full day workshop on portraits and another full day workshop on the Sunday for wedding photography. Some are doing both days, some are doing all three, you know, because they don't get photographers up there. So I'm heading up there, and I've had emails from people saying, look, I'm really looking forward to you coming, la 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 la. I've worked with this photographer, or I've got my website, and I go to their websites, either for the photographers that they're working for or their own websites. And lovely work in some cases, but I see a lot of exactly what Martin is talking about. The try very hard to show everything and make this picture dynamic philosophy, when really the reverse is true. From my experience, yes, you've got to try hard, but you've got to try hard to make that subject scream at you and make everything else lesser than it. Wedding photography is one of the primary examples of where this goes usually, you know, wrong, just very, very wrong. And apply this to the rest of your photography, but imagine a bride and groom, a vintage car, and a 19th century mansion. Now here's the situation. You want to capture the grandeur of all of this in one shot. You have a bride with a lovely wedding dress, the long full train, a beautiful, you know, 1920s vintage car, you know, a Bentley, a Roller, or something like that. A gorgeous mansion. You're thinking, wow, I've got all this really cool stuff to include in my photograph. If you include all of that in one photograph with equal placement or equal amount of sharpness, you are just going to ruin the photograph. Mm-hmm. Essentially, your photograph is a bride and groom. They are your subject for two reasons. They've hired you to make them the subject. You're not there to shoot landscapes and stick people in them, right? Which a lot of wedding photographers tend to do. I'll make a lovely landscape. Okay, you two, come over here and stand in here. All right, looks good. Because that's not what you're hired to do. The bride and groom have hired you to make them the subject, and every other thing is subordinate to them. But there are
times when that works, though.
Yes,
I mean, I've even seen some of your work where you know, if I wanted to be really cruel, I could say you've shot a landscape and put a bride and groom in it. But it works well. And I'm thinking the case in point of the one with the old ruined truck and the couple up on the hillside behind it.
Oh yeah,
but it works well.
But without them, it would. I don't think it would have the power of it. And the placement, the power of the image is in having the bride and groom there. I know what you're saying.
Yep.
And you know you're embarrassing me publicly here.
Sorry, I don't mean to.
No, any kidding. No, you're absolutely right. Remembering, of course, that is one of, you know, a few hundred photographs that they received.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, but if that was every one of the photographs, that would be it. But even in that photograph, which you can have a look at on my website, even in that photograph, the bride and groom are placed so that the light hits them and the everything else is subordinate or supportive of them. If I was just photographing the tractor, I would have actually done it from a more three-dimensional angle so that it became the core subject. Mm-hmm. I can think of other images that I've taken, and some are just on my blog, you know, where I've got beautiful sky and light. They're just recent images I took last weekend.
Right.
And the bride and groom, you know, are in the landscape, but I've used the light to make sure that they are highlighted and shaped by it.
Sure.
But I'm thinking of photographs I've seen recently on other websites where, yes, it's tried too hard because there's too much depth of field.
Right.
So everything is in focus. The photographer has walked too far back because he thinks, oh, I've got to get this all in.
Yeah.
And also has not changed his viewpoint or perspective to make the photograph dynamic or interesting. Basically, taking the photograph from a 5 or 6 foot perspective where they normally stand, raise the camera to the eye, click, you know, bride, car, mansion, you know, la, la, la.
Mm.
And the photograph is reliant on these grand subject matters or grand subjects like a bride, a groom, a vintage car, and a mansion because they are grand in themselves. But the photograph lacks grandeur because it's tried too hard. It doesn't have a screaming subject, and no work was actually put into creating an image in terms of composition, viewpoint and perspective, depth of field, and light. The subject itself, because it was grand, was relied upon to create an image. And that's where we make so many mistakes as photographers. It's like saying, there's a flower, I'll take a picture of it, isn't that picture beautiful? No, it's not. It's just a picture of a flower. You didn't make the flower, you just took a picture of it. And therein is where the keep it simple, stupid thing actually works, because the idea is to make the subject what you look at, and everything else, no matter how grand it might be, make it subordinate in whatever way you can by composition, using light to highlight the subject, using depth of field to make everything else just not, you know, just out of focus so that your eye only sees this, but the subliminal idea of context is given. And of course, you know, composition, place them somewhere in the golden mean, in a dynamic third, place them, you know, off to the left third, the top third, whatever it might be. The keep it simple rule is actually quite complex in some ways because you have to think of these things in order to keep it simple. You have to think, well, should I minimize my depth of field? Well, I probably should in a situation like this. Should I maximize my depth of field? Well, yes, if I'm leading the eye through the image, I want to, you know, make that a simple flow. I want people just to simply go, oh, here, 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 and lead right through to the mountains in the background. What perspective and viewpoint should I use? Should I elevate my tripod, lower my tripod? Should I use a wide angle or a telephoto lens? So the keep it simple, stupid method is only applies to the result, not the process. The process can be quite complex, but if our result or our intention is to keep the image dynamic by its simplicity, then the process is something that you need to seriously think about. So your question, Martin, or your suggestion is very well placed, because I've been looking at the websites of photographers who've invited me to look or said I've been working with this photographer and seen exactly that taking place, trying too hard to make the subjects the reason, you know, or too inclusive. You know, too dominant, everything too dominant in the photo because they're such great subjects. Well, they're great subjects in three-dimensional reality, but in a photograph, you have to decide what is the thing that you want to say and make sure that that is it. That's what we were talking about that week, but of course, last week rather. But Martin, you've basically asked us to clarify that in terms of, you know, the subject matter in the Keep It Simple, Stupid process, which, as I say, sounds simple in terms of the end result, but the process of it is very disciplined. It's actually a decisive process that you say to yourself, well, what am I going to do with this? You know, which is important. It's all good. It's all good. But as in all good photography, it's a case of what to leave in and what to leave out. Yeah. And the harder you get on yourself, the more disciplined you get on that question, the better and more dynamic your photographs will be. I know you don't think so. You might disagree with me, but the more disciplined you are on that, the more dynamic your images will be. So, Martin, thank you very much for just bringing that simple point back to us and allowing me time to explain it. I really appreciate it.
It's interesting because sort of related to that and thinking back a few weeks to when you were talking about cropping, over the last week or two, I've been going through my, you know, last 3 years of photos, the stuff that I've shot since I got my 7D. And because now I've got Lightroom, what I've been
looking... Which I just got the other day.
Yeah, have you had a chance to look at it yet?
No, Matt, I've been too busy. Okay.
Just as a side note, you'll probably note that the version you've received is version 1.0. Mm-hmm. As soon as you've installed it, hit the updater because 1.1's available.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Will do.
But anyway, what I've been doing is going into the develop module, and if you hit the keyboard shortcut R, it allows you to crop and resize. And what I've been doing is looking at an image the way I shot it and going, I just think Shelton would have cropped that differently. And so I've been cropping things and putting the subjects onto the major thirds. Mm-hmm. And it really does make a huge difference to the way you see the image.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I just thought that was sort of related to what you were talking about.
Oh, absolutely it is related. And, you know, we have talked about cropping in camera, you might say, composing tightly. I have an action in Photoshop that's simply called crop 10%. And I'm I crop pretty tightly, or I like to, you know, believe that I do. But every now and again, I'll just hit this action, and it literally, all I've done is in image, you know, or in canvas size, you know, cropped it to 10% all around. And just, I'll every now and again just click on this action, crop 10%, and see what happens. And more often than not, I'm more pleased with the image.
Wow.
And I tend to believe that I crop pretty tightly, you know, or I'm good at, you know, knowing what to leave in and knowing what to leave out. Yeah. And yet this action has taught me a lot. It's taught me that I can even get tighter. I can even make this more dynamic simply by moving in another 10%. It's a small percentage in, you know, in one way. But boy, sometimes I've clicked it twice and gone, ooh, I'll even like that more.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm learning myself from that.
You want to give yourself a margin of error, though.
Well, in the shooting, maybe, yes. Yeah. But I'm a firm believer in getting it right in camera.
Yeah.
But this, I thought I got it right in camera. That's my point.
Yeah, right.
But this little action has said, ooh, well, maybe I could have gone even tighter. I was happy with what I got, but, you know, actually, I like this a little bit more. So, and of course, every time I click that action, I'm losing resolution. So I'm learning on the spot to actually, get in tighter. You know, keep your pixels, get in tighter. And it's taught me a heck of a lot. So I'm very, very interested to see, you know, how much more I've got to learn to crop in the image. Now, we should wind up by talking about our window light portrait competition. We've got a few entries.
Another few more entries coming this week, yep.
But if we could get some more from you, I know you're probably all waiting for the ideal opportunity, but we'd love to see some more of your entries.
This podcast is going to go up Sunday night Australian time, and we're going to have to make a deadline of Wednesday night Australian time because Shelton and I will probably be recording episode 91 on the Thursday morning.
Australian time.
So if you haven't got your portrait into us by then, you won't be eligible for this particular assignment / competition.
Yep, absolutely.
And our fantastic prize is, Shelton?
It's a Corel Paint Shop Pro, and it's a really great product.
Sweet.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's... what you can't do with Corel Paint Shop Pro as a photographer, you really don't need to do. The great thing about this program, Photoshop is a terrific program, and it is the stable, you know, it's the staple sort of the software that photographers use. But I have that loaded and I use it, but I also use Corel Paint Shop Pro because it has some fantastic one-click enhancements that, you know, you just go, oh, that's cool. They've really, you know, like the timeline thing that they have. Oh, that's cool. I do it with a little high voice as well. You know, cool. You hear me squeaking away here as I'm working on my image. The timeline function that it has, you can turn your photograph into anything from any particular era, a daguerreotype, you know.
You're talking about that.
It's just awesome.
That's great.
The way it works, black and white, it's film replication enhancements, it's infrared replication enhancements. It's just terrific, this program. So you may already have Photoshop, and that's fine, but this would be certainly a program that either if I didn't have Photoshop, I could use just as much and still get just the same results. It handles raw TIFF, a JPEG, and has so many one-click and yet so many other tools for serious working, slow process-by-process working. It is a really great program. So even if you don't win it, have a look at it. You can download a version of it. And have a trial and have a look at this program. It really is fantastic. But one of our lucky window light portrait shooters is going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once they do, of course, we'd love their thoughts on it. But more window light portraits, please.
And that person will be announced in next week's episode.
Sure will. Sure will. So we've got a few days to get those portraits done and get them into us so we can check them out.
And I'm just going to float this with the listeners. I'm heading to the States.
Yeah.
In November.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be over there for 3 weeks. The first week will be work related. I'll be in Ventura for a week.
You poor bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn, eh?
I'll be flying into LA on the 10th, Saturday the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Working in Ventura from the Monday through to the Friday. And Kath and Max are going to fly across on the following Saturday, which will be about the 16th, I think, 7th, 8th, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And we are then going to have a 2-week holiday. And I'm more than happy to catch up with one or two listeners if anyone's interested. What we're planning on doing. Hey?
Yeah, so you want to be taken out to dinner? Is that what you're saying, Bruce?
Mate, I'm open to suggestions.
Oh, okay. All right. So, look, there you go, folks. Meet the famous Bruce Williams of Shutters Inc.
What we're planning is...
And you can listen to his accent for real.
Yes.
All night.
You can have a night of giggle, giggle, crap, crap.
Yes, that's right.
What we're actually planning is to fly from LA up to Seattle and then spend a week or a week and a half driving back from Seattle down through Portland, Frisco, and back to LA, and then flying home.
Now, we do expect you to work your way through Oregon very slowly and do some beautiful landscape work there.
Mate, believe me, if I had my way, it would be all like that. But there's a lot to see in between Seattle and LA.
Yeah.
And not a lot of time to see it, unfortunately.
I'm surprised you're not going from LA to Yosemite.
Well, yeah. Again, you know, I'd love to. Although I do hear that you need to book to get into Yosemite.
Yeah, apparently you're probably right. But if any of our American listeners can help Bruce out on this subject, because it's only a few hours' drive, I believe, from LA.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think. I mean, California's a big state, but, you know, once you get on the highway, it's not that difficult to get there if you leave early enough.
Maybe I should try and do that before Kath and Max get there.
I wonder. Look, a day in Yosemite, you know, really is from what I'm told, you can get great stuff in a day. Major driving around the major roads and stopping off at the major vistas. If you've got nice light and you know what you're doing, Bruce, you know, you'd be able to spend a day or two in Yosemite and you know, even if you couldn't get accommodation there, you might be able to drive in and out.
Yep.
And there, of course, you are there in November, so it'll be winter, it'll be snowing, and you could get some gorgeous stuff, but I don't think there'd be the amount of tourists there, but I could be wrong. Hey, I could be really wrong.
It would be awesome to photograph it in winter.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, for sure.
Anyway.
Look, If you live in the, if you live in California or you have some experience in this and you want to make some suggestions to Bruce, I'm sure he'd appreciate it, because his time is limited and he wants to get the best photographs.
And we're still trying to plan our itinerary. So
yeah. So if you think Yosemite is worth the trip and you can help him out with some suggestions there, please get back to us, because Bruce has limited time and wants to come back with the best pictures he possibly can while also having a holiday with, you know, his family.
Actually, so you know what? You've just given me the idea. I'm flying into LA. I'm going to get in there on the Saturday morning. I don't have to start work till Monday, so maybe I could do it on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a drive out there on my own.
Ooh, yeah.
I might have to look into that, see if I can get booked in.
Well, if you do, mate, I'll be incredibly envious. You'll have a great time. But if, yes, you want to meet the great Bruce Williams, he's in your part of town, folks. So, you know, and he'll be looking for as much freeloading as possible. All right? So,
oh, dear.
You've got time to plan, folks. You've got time to plan. There was the thought that, and I think Bob Iverson was going to do this, but I haven't heard from you, Bob, to get me over there to do some workshops. You know, if North Queensland can do it, surely you guys can. I'd love to come and meet you all. I sure would.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, there you go,
and
folks.
I'm not averse to a second trip back to the US.
No, that's for sure. We can do a tour.
Absolutely. The Shutters Inc. World Tour.
The crap giggle tour.
Yeah. All right, mate.
Before we leave, thank you to all those who have contributed their thoughts on our video podcast idea. We have had a few responses, and it certainly is of interest. Please, if it's something that interests you, let us know, because we would be happy to go ahead with it, but only if we believe that it was, you know, going to be worth it for you, and of course could justify our input, which would be quite substantial, as you can imagine. So let us know on that front as well, either via, you know, your messages on the Flickr site that we have going, or via your emails and correspondence with us. That would be really terrific to know.
Yep, and remember, you can email me at studio@audiotu.com or him at shelton@audiotu.com.
That's us.
Beautiful. Thank you for all of that.
No worries. My pleasure. Good to talk to you all again. And thank you. Keep that Shutters Inc. Flickr site active as well, folks. If you haven't been there and joined yet, make sure you do. And, you know, yeah, I really love the interaction on that site. And it gives us a lot to talk about, gives us photos to look at. So head down there and have a bit of a look as well.
Absolutely. All right, mate. We'll talk with you next week.
Beautiful. Will do.
All right, mate. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
No. How much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.